So today I want to discuss two different mitzvos, which are very relevant to each other. It's things that we don't think about that often in our lives because we're just not involved in these activities. But they're important mitzvos to understand and learn from. So the first mitzvah is mitzvah number 576 in our count. And this is, we're still in Parshas Ki Tzetzeh. This is chapter 23 of Devarim. It says, Ki Savo Bekerem Re'echa, when you enter into the vineyard of your friend, you shall eat grapes to your satiation. You should feel to your desire, is the translation here. And don't put them into your vessel. Don't pack them up for the road. Don't put them into a jar or anything like that. So we don't mean you can just go in and eat one of his grapes. That's not what it means. I mean, if you read this verse simply, he'd be telling you to go into someone's vineyard and eat his grapes, which we would call theft. That obviously is not what Torah means. The rabbis teach what it means if you're a worker. If you're working in the vineyard, you're somebody there to harvest the vineyard. As you're working, you have permission to eat as you work. That's the mitzvah. It continues, Ki savo bekamas riecha. So too, if you enter into the grain, the standing grains of your friend, so you're there harvesting grain, katafta melilas bidecha, you can pluck the ears of grain with your hands. V'chermesh l'sani, if you cannot lift up a sickle, akamas riecha, against the grains of your fellow. So also if you're a worker who is there harvesting grain, you're allowed to pick the grains and eat them with your hands, but you cannot take a sickle and cut them down or take them home in that manner. So this is a mitzvah upon, it seems to be, upon the owner of a field, the landowner. They should allow his workers to eat as they work. That's the mitzvah. Technically, the workers shouldn't be allowed to eat, meaning it's theft. It belongs to the boss. If he says yes, then yes. If he says no, then no. The Torah is saying the boss can't stop them. He has to let them eat as they're working. So that's the mitzvah. We'll talk about later on another related mitzvah, which I want to get to more a little later today, which is losachsam shorbadisha. You cannot muzzle an animal as it's threshing. No. Just so you can't have your work, you have to let your workers eat as they work. You have to let your animals eat as they work as well. So very two related mitzvahs. So we'll get to that one a little bit later. What's the rules of this mitzvah? What exactly are the guidelines of letting your workers eat? So number one, it only applies if they're working in what's called gidulei karka, things that grow from the ground. So for instance, if they're involved in making cheese, if they're involved in in milking animals, so if they're involved in fishing, if they're fishermen, so then they don't have to eat. So you don't have to let them eat. It's only if they're involved in agriculture if you let them eat. That's number one. Number two is that the eating is only done in certain contexts, meaning that there's two rules given to when they can eat. Either if the produce is still attached to the ground, they can eat as they're finishing up the labor, meaning as they're harvesting. So if they're there watering, or they're there weeding or something like that in the middle of the process, they can't eat. If they're there completing the process of farming, they're harvesting the produce, they're allowed to eat. If the stuff's already harvested, and you're working in what we call tolush, you're working in things that are already picked, so then they're allowed to eat before they're finished. I mean, let's say they're packaging up grains. So before the packages are sealed, they can still eat the grains. Once they seal up the packages, they can't eat anymore. So you have, those are two rules. So they can eat as, if it's talking about things that are still part of the ground, they can eat as they finish the process, as they harvest. If it's things that are already detached, they can eat before they're done packaging it or finishing the process with it. Those are important rules. If you're working on the farm but not harvesting, you can't eat. That's clear. And if you're working in things that don't grow from the ground, you can't eat. The Torah says they can eat savecha, which means so they are satisfied, they're filled. So the rabbis tell us that means they can't overeat. They can't stuff themselves silly with the fruits. They might say, great, I'll eat now, I'll never have to pay for my own food. I'll eat right now, it's breakfast time, and I'll stuff myself, and I'll be full for lunch and dinner too. I mean, eat till you're full, but you can't overeat. That's important. So the workers have to have some form of recognition that this doesn't belong to them. They can't just do what they want with it. There has to be a balance. They're allowed to eat, but not too much. Additionally, the Torah says, okay, chalusitin, they can't put it into their own vessel. They can't pack it for the road. They can't stock up on it. They can eat as they're working what they need. They can't overeat, and they can't take it home. Two very important rules. Additionally, the harvesters can only eat once they've filled up the basket that's for their boss, for the landowner. I mean, if the basket for the landowner still has work to be done, then they can't start eating the produce. But if they filled up their basket and there's more produce in the field, they're allowed to eat at that point. So that's also important. They can only eat on the actual trees or plants they're focused on right now. Meaning, if I'm working over here on the apples, I can't go pluck an orange. Because I'm not working on oranges, I'm working on apples. So if I'm working on the wheat, I can't go and pluck some barley. I can't do that. So I can only eat from the things that I'm working on currently. However, let's say I'm working on apples. But I don't like apples, I like oranges. But I'm hungry now. So I'm allowed to stall and eat the oranges later. I can do that. I can save my appetite and eat oranges later. That's okay to do. But if I'm currently working the apples, I can't just go pick an orange and come back to the apples again. That I can't do.
But could you, when you say stall, does that mean stall and then go work on the oranges?
I mean, finish up my work at the apples and then go eat oranges later. But I don't have to, I'm allowed to save my appetite is the point.
But do you have to work on the oranges?
Yes, you have to work on the oranges. If you're not working the oranges, you can't take oranges. You have to be working there. The one thing you could do if you're not working currently, the rabbi said you are allowed to eat as you walk between row to row in the field. Meaning, technically, the Torah is telling you only eat as you're working. But the rabbi said, well, that's going to waste time from the boss because you're going to stop working to munch. So the boss would prefer if you work now, and as you're transitioning, munch then. So the rabbi said you are allowed to eat in between rows. So if I worked on apples, I could take an apple in my pocket, and I could eat it as I'm walking over to the oranges. That I could do. But I can't go and grab an orange before I start working on oranges. But that saves time for the landowner, so you don't waste your time on the job. As you're eating on the job, you have to eat it raw, as is. You can't start taking out your grill or something, or your pan, and whipping up a recipe. You can't even spice it, because then that'll encourage you to eat more than you really need. I mean, the point is that you eat what you need, but don't eat too much. So if I was allowed to bring in my pocket some sauce and some spices, I can mix it up with things, so then I'd end up eating more than I actually need to eat, because it tastes good. But the point here is that I should be able to eat, not to be tormented by all the food in front of me when I'm hungry, but I shouldn't make a big deal out of it. So you have to eat it as is, and you have to eat it plain. You're not supposed to spice it up in any way. If somebody does stop work to eat at the wrong time, or to eat at the wrong stage of the process, so besides being theft, I'm not allowed to eat at that point without the permission of the owner, so that's theft. Beyond that, there's a second prohibition. This the second verse I read before that says, "Chermesh lo sanif ach kamas re'echa." You can't lift a sickle over your friend's grain. So the rabbis say that means that if you're out in the field and you eat, this beyond being a simple gazela, being simple theft, you violated a second prohibition of not to lift your sickle over their grain. There's two prohibitions here. And the question is, well, why can't we just call it theft? Why does the Torah have to tell you you're a thief? And plus you violated something else. Ultimately it is theft. I've taken some produce that doesn't belong to me. So the Sefer HaChinuch says, a very important point, very simply, he says, the extra warning given here is because the temptation is so great. Imagine, you're out in a field, it's a hot day, you're working hard all morning, you're starving, in front of you is a nice juicy orange. No one's watching. No, this landowner has a vast, orchard of oranges, and there's thousands of oranges here. He's never going to notice if one's missing. I'm hungry. It's very easy to justify taking that orange without permission. So the Torah says, number one, we're going to allow you to do it as you work, which we'll talk about more where that comes from. But number two, if you do it the wrong way, being that you're so tempted, we have to give you extra warning not to do it, because the challenge is that it's just that much greater. Picture people in modern day jobs, taking a little thing from the office. I take the stapler, I grab a pen, I have an extra cup from the coffee room, I take it home, whatever, the little things that are around, no one's going to notice, what's the big deal, no one really cares. But if you don't have permission for it, it's theft. Being that theft is something which is so easy to be tempted to do and justify, the Torah gives us an extra level of warning. So the Torah says, number one, you're a regular old thief. That's called gazela, l'sigzol don't steal. And number two, there's an additional prohibition you're violating if you do take fruit on the job they're not supposed to take. So that it's an extra warning based on the extra temptation that I have.
I'm not clear on when you can eat on the job and when you're forbidden if there's an orange, pretty orange sitting there.
Yeah, okay.
Can you clarify that again, please?
Yeah, so number one, if they're still attached to the tree, you can only eat during the time of harvest.
Okay.
And only if you've already filled up the basket for the boss, you can then take some for yourself. If you're there, let's say, watering the trees, before the harvest, you can't pick any oranges, for sure.
Okay, thank you.
And also, if they're already been harvested, you can only eat them until you've finished your work. If they've already been packaged up and stored up, you can't take any more. So those are the two main rules in this. Also, if you start putting on spices or taking too much or packing it to go, that's also violating the prohibition. The Mishnah tells us, though, that even the workers are allowed to eat, they shouldn't take advantage of it, because they're going to, you know, people are not going to hire them anymore. If you know this guy, you know, he's a good worker, but you put him out there and half the oranges are already gone. So then, like, he's going to, it's the job market's going to be closed off for him. You know, he's not going to be able to get a job. So it's wise that people, you know, only eat in moderation on the job, even when they're allowed to. Just don't overdo it, because that's like usually, let's just, someone works at a restaurant. So typically, I think the arrangements are you're allowed to take the food from the restaurant as you're, you know, when you're done working, in between shifts. But if you work at Ben Yehuda Pizza, and every single day you're downing three pizzas, essentially you're going to say, like, it's not worth having you working here. It just doesn't work out this way. So it's the same thing. You're in the field. If you're just eating too much, even if it's within halachic limits and you're okay halachically, it's just not smart, because it's not good for your resume. So the Mishnah says, be careful of that. Now, what are some basic ideas of this mitzvah? What are basic lessons? And some of them are very obvious and some are less obvious. Number one certainly is the kindness to workers. We have to appreciate somebody who's working for you, your employee is working hard, they're putting forth efforts, and to have them work and not show some form of appreciation in the work, that's something which is negative in our own personal midos. We should feel gratitude. We should feel that I appreciate this work and I want him to be able to enjoy himself as he works. Secondly, I think even probably more important, we have to know how torturous it can be to be working with food which is tasty when you can't have any. That's something, we know what it's like, let's say just in our own lives, let's say it's a fast day, and you know, you're in the kitchen, you know, whipping something up, but you're fasting, so it's hard. Someone's trying to diet, right? But they walk into an event with all this delicious, you know, cakes. So say I'm not going to eat and the food's right in front of me, it's a very difficult challenge. So if you're on the job, and you're told, well, you can't eat any of the food, but I want you to work with this food all day long, it's torturous. It's torment. It's not fair to the worker to have to go through that. So the Torah recognizes that. And the Torah says, we can't have it that way because that's not humane. And therefore, we're going to allow the worker to eat on the job, regardless of what the boss says, because that's part of being compassionate, that's part of feeling for another, and recognizing others' needs. So the worker has to be reasonable, we said. No, he can't eat too much. But you have to let him eat, because it would be just cruel otherwise. No, we don't want you to be there, to be involved in cruelty and not allow the guy to eat as he's sitting there staring at this food. We want that to happen. You know, you could read many stories, let's say Holocaust stories, of people who are forced in camps maybe to serve food to the officers, but they couldn't touch any of it. And they were starving, tortured people, and just to have to stare at that food and give it to your own tormentor, not to have any, was the biggest torture. So to have a guy on the job who's working hard in the hot sun and hungry, not let him just taste anything of what he's doing, that's torturous, it's cruel, it's inhumane, and we avoid that in the Torah. Additionally, Rabbeinu Bachaya says, one of the great early Rishonim, Rabbeinu Bachaya says that if a person has a desire to eat, and they're on the job, it's likely they will eat. As I mentioned before, the temptation is tremendous. You're there, you're hungry, it's a big field, you know, the boss isn't really around all the time, what's the big deal, he has so much money anyways, you can justify and you'll take a bite. So Rabbeinu Bachaya says the Torah recognizes the temptation, and the Torah knows that if we don't let you eat, you may likely eat anyways and violate the Torah and become a thief. But yet, the temptation is so strong, it's just not fair to give a worker that challenge. So Torah says, we don't want to give you a challenge which you can't handle, so we're going to let you eat anyways. And we understand in general, the Torah never gives us a test we can't handle. Now, life has its tests. Life has its challenges. But we believe that any challenge that comes our way, Hashem has confidence that we can overcome it. It might take hard work, and we do fail at times, but we can do it. But challenges that we say are like, you know, it's just nearly impossible to do, the Torah won't give us that challenge. So the Torah is looking at workers and saying, if they're out on the job and they're working so hard, certainly people are going to fail in this temptation. It's just, you know, food is a temptation. No one's again, there's so many justifications to the action. So Hashem says, rather than have you fight the temptation, I'll let you have it. No, you're allowed to eat. Again, within reason, within moderation, but you're allowed to eat. And ultimately, it's bad for the boss to be so strict with his workers. The Torah is prescribing that the boss should have good midos. I mean, the boss should know, what's the big deal? I have a guy working hard in the field. He already filled up my basket. To let him have an apple? How much am I losing? But I'm gaining so much by making a human being feel good and appreciated. So the Torah is kind of prescribing here proper midos and a proper attitude towards workers. Rav Hirsch says one further point. Rav Hirsch says that, you know, at this point in the job, we said, you know, it's at the harvest. You're filling up the basket. The basket's full, and then you're moving on kind of to the next stage. So he says, at this point in the job, this is where the landowner is going to say, look at all of my wealth. You know, it's mine, mine, mine. You know, I have, so look at all those fruits I have. So at that point is where the Torah says, don't be selfish. You think you're so wealthy, you're admiring, you know, your millions of, you know, bales of whatever it is, or all these different boxes you have of grain or of fruits. Make sure at that point that you're generous to others, and don't become a selfish person. So at that point you get this reminder that I have to give to others and not just, you know, keep it all for myself. So those are all the different lessons that we get from this mitzvah. I want to move into the similar mitzvah. This is actually mitzvah number 596. This is skipping over a bunch. We'll go back, but yeah.
For a comment or question.
Sure.
It seems related to the mitzvah of setting aside part of the field for people who don't have food, for the poor.
Right.
And the other thing is that since these are commandments, in the temple periods, if you know, was there a government that was enforcing these rules? Because this is an important right, that, you know, to be able to eat while you're working rather than starving. Would the government enforce this rule?
Right, it's two good points.
Kind of workers right. Go, if they weren't fed, could they go to an authority? Or could the poor go to the authorities in the case of the other mitzvah and say, you know, we weren't allowed to have our share and have redress?
Right, two good points. So the first point, I think you're right. The relation between what's called peah, as we're talking about, the mitzvah of peah, leaving the corner of your field. The relation I would see is that both of them are telling the landowner, you have to think about others as you harvest. You know, you're harvesting and you're gaining all of this money. Think about others as well. We know the classic image, you know, of the in the Middle Ages of the landowners who were cruel and, you know, and unforgiving. The Torah doesn't want to allow that. You know, you have people who are workers, you have people who own the land, but you have to always keep in mind those workers and give to them and the poor. That's a good point. In terms of enforcement, in the times in the temple period, really the Jewish court system would enforce these laws.
They would.
They would. You could, you know, if you found that the boss was not allowing you to eat, you could take him to the Beis Din, and they would enforce it. They had their methods, you know, whether in terms of, let's say, if you weren't leaving over part of your field, they could tell you, well, we're there for giving your whole field to the poor. They had different methods of enforcing the laws. But the Beis Din in those times can enforce any of the Torah laws, and this is one of them. So workers could certainly take their boss to court and take care of this issue if he's trying to prevent them from eating. They could do that. So the other related mitzvah is similar to the human beings eating, as animals have to go out to eat as they work. The Torah says, "Lo sach som shor bedisho." You can't muzzle your ox as he threshes, is the way the Torah words it. And don't muzzle your ox as it threshes. So in an animal, you can't tell it yes or no, but you can muzzle it. So the Torah doesn't allow you to muzzle animals as they're working. This is a prohibition in the Torah. It's interesting because when it comes to the human workers, the Torah doesn't give a prohibition. It gives a positive command: feed them. When it comes to the animal, the Torah says don't muzzle it. And I think for practical reasons, this one makes more sense for the animal. But you don't muzzle the animal. When it says shor bedisho, an ox in its threshing, so the rabbis teach us: well, it's not only an ox; it's any animal. It's not only threshing, it's any job it's doing. Why it chooses to discuss it based on a shor bedisho could be a different discussion, but ultimately it means you can't muzzle any animal as it does work for you. That's the rule. You have to let it eat as it works. It's, as we said before, it applies to things that grow from the ground, similar to the human workers. So if the animal is, I don't know what else animals would do, but the animal was doing something else for you, you're allowed to muzzle it. But if it's working in produce from the ground, you cannot muzzle the animal. The rabbis teach us it's not just a physical muzzle. You know, anything that you do to stop from eating is also part of the problem. So if you stand there next to the animal, every time it goes down, you scream at it. Or you whack it with a stick or something to stop from eating, you've also violated the Torah command. You have to let the animal freely eat as it works and leave it alone. So we see that the compassion of the Torah extends to animals. We're saying just like you have to let the humans eat, recognize animals also have this temptation. Animals, even more so than humans. The animal can't understand why I'm not allowed to eat right now. If the animal's muzzled, the animal feels very tortured. It can't understand why it's muzzled. It looks at all the food around. It's hungry. And it's, you know, it feels, it's very, it's cruel. It's cruel to the animal. So Torah says that the compassion of a human being has to extend to animals as well. As we've discussed in previous times, we've discussed that concept. Different authorities and different commentaries discuss, well, is it more for the animal, more for us? Meaning, on the one hand, we want the animal not to feel tortured or tormented, but primarily the Torah is speaking to us and saying, you have to be compassionate. I train you to be compassionate through caring for this animal, because caring for animals teaches us compassion. So it's not necessarily about the poor animal, but it's about us being compassionate people and not taking out cruelty even upon animals. The sensitivity that develops towards an animal should therefore apply to people as well. If I'm compassionate to animals, I should be compassionate to people. Unfortunately, you do see in the news sometimes, you know, stories of people who are very, very protective of animals. When it comes to human beings, they're not quite as forgiving, which is, you know, that's just the reality of life sometimes. But ultimately, if you have compassion upon animals, you should be compassionate to people too. It's what we call kav v'chomer. For sure, it should be that way. This prohibition.
You still have to watch this animal. Whose animal is this? Is this the worker's animal or the owner's animal?
The owner's animal. Yes, the owner's animal.
I mean the landlord. Or the landowner.
Right. It means it's your animal. You can't muzzle it as you work it. I mean, I guess whoever is actually doing the work would have the prohibition.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Because if it's the worker,
right?
Who has the shmirah for that animal? Is it if the worker doesn't own that animal?
Yeah.
The owner owns that animal. He has to be. It's in private property. I mean, he has to be.
No, but I said, whoever is overseeing the work at the time, I think would have this obligation. I mean, whether it's the worker or the owner, whoever's overseeing the job and leading the animal around to work, he would be the one who's obligated to be sure it's not muzzled.
I think Henry had a good point. You said God's...
Yeah, I said, or is it Hashem's animal? There seems to be something higher going on here, that whoever owns the animal still has rights, if that's the term for it. We don't... Whoever the owner is, we don't mistreat the animal.
You're saying Hashem says, I'm letting you use it, but ultimately it's not your property in the full sense of the word. You can't just do whatever you want with it. I think that's a valid point. I think many things in the Torah, we see it that way. Hashem tells us, this, I'm letting you use it, but in limitation, because it's not yours. You can't do anything you want with anything in the world. You have to do it in the realm of what Hashem feels is right and wrong. What's a fascinating point about this prohibition, not muzzling your animal, is that this is actually looked at halachically, as kind of the model prohibition in the Torah, and I'll explain what I mean by that. The Torah describes different punishments for different violations, and most are not carried out anymore nowadays. We don't have a beis din with that power, but the Torah prescribes punishments for prohibitions. So some prohibitions are so severe that they might incur capital punishment. But a typical prohibition in the Torah, we call a lav, the punishment is malchus, is lashes, 39 lashes. So the Torah, there's a description in our parsha that we're discussing now, in Kisetse, about giving lashes. As an aside, you know, lashes are only given if the violation is done purposely, with a warning, and with two witnesses. If it's not done, you know, purposely with a warning to witnesses, then no lashes are given. The Torah describes the process of giving lashes to somebody who violates a prohibition. But the Torah never says, you know, which prohibitions incur lashes. It doesn't tell you why you give lashes. It just says in the Torah, you know, if people are having a fight and there's somebody who is righteous and somebody who's guilty, so basically you give the wicked one lashes and let the righteous one off the hook. But it doesn't tell you what he's wicked for, what did he do wrong. But the very next verse in the Torah is this verse, Lo sachsom shor b'disho, don't muzzle your ox. So the sages teach us, they say that the Torah is giving us here a clue as to what type of violation incurs lashes. It's a violation which is comparable to the violation of muzzling an ox. So this becomes the model prohibition of the Torah, meaning any prohibition that resembles this would incur lashes if done, again, purposely with a warning and with witnesses. Any prohibition that doesn't resemble this, you're off the hook. This becomes like the ideal or the symbol of all prohibitions. So there's no coincidences in the Torah. I mean, there has to be a reason why this one was chosen to be the model prohibition of the Torah. What's the deeper message of not muzzling your ox, which teaches us about No, the entire broad vision of violating Torah. What is it about this prohibition which is so significant? I mean, in our minds, it makes sense that we shouldn't be cruel to the animal, but it doesn't stand out as the model prohibition of the Torah. So where does this come in? So I want to share with you maybe a few thoughts on this one. The first thought is based on Rav Hirsch's writings. Rav Hirsch says that we're supposed to show consideration for the animal. Not muzzling it is showing our compassion upon the animal. So too, we're supposed to show consideration for a sinner. That's number one. Meaning, even somebody who's incurring lashes, the Torah says you can't give more than is prescribed. If the court gives more lashes than they're supposed to give, then now they're violating the Torah. Right? The court's doing something wrong by giving more lashes. So you have to show compassion. I do what the Torah tells me to do to this guy who's a sinner, but no more. But he says, furthermore, an animal is performing obedient service to his master. You have an animal out there in the fields working for you. The animal is doing its job. It's being obedient. And the master has to show consideration to the animal because this animal is working for me. And it's doing me a favor, as it were. If you muzzle the animal, then the master is not recognizing the obedient service of the animal. The master is missing out on the fact, this animal, I should show gratitude to the animal. I should show consideration because it's working for me. If I muzzle it, then I'm tormenting it. I'm not appreciating it. So Rav Hirsch, he implies, he says, so too, we obediently serve Hashem. And we're like that animal. We're in this world. It's our job to do Hashem's bidding. We have to serve Hashem. And we have to recognize that Hashem is compassionate to us. I mean, it goes from both directions. If the master is compassionate to the animal should recognize the compassion of the master. He should recognize what the master does for him. Now, if we serve Hashem, now we are Hashem's obedient, of course, animals, but we are obedient servants, and Hashem shows us compassion, and we have to recognize that compassion. When someone violates the Torah, what they're doing is they're denying this. They're denying that Hashem shows compassion to the human being. If we understood what Hashem does for us, we'd always follow His will. It's only because somewhere in the back of our minds, we don't appreciate Hashem. That's what gives us the ability to violate Hashem's wishes, because we don't appreciate it. Now, the animal might have a very, very compassionate and kind master. So some animals actually do recognize that. I think we see that in life. But some animals don't recognize it, and they rebel. And you say, you're crazy, because this master is taking care of you, feeding you, giving you medications, but the animal doesn't get it. Sometimes the animal just doesn't understand that, and the animal will become violent against its master. So when we rebel against Hashem, when we violate the Torah, what we're doing is we're not recognizing Hashem's compassion towards us. So this is actually brought out based on the process of giving lashes. The Mishnah describes that the whip they would use was made out of cowhide, and there were straps of donkey hide that were also hanging off of the whip. So it was a cowhide whip, a leather whip, and there was donkey leather, which was used as straps coming from the whip. So the Gemara tells us this is actually hinting towards a verse in the book of Yeshaya, in Isaiah. The verse says, "Amjada shor konehu," that an ox knows its owner, "v'chamor," and the donkey recognizes the trough of its owners. So even animals know where their food's coming from. But then Hashem says, my nation doesn't get it. The Jews don't realize where is their life coming from? All their prosperity, where is it coming from? It's coming from Hashem. Even the animal knows where to get where, the hand that feeds it. What we do sometimes, as they say, is we bite the hand that feeds us. That's what we do. That's the verse in Yeshaya. So that verse uses the metaphor of the ox and the donkey. So therefore, we take cowhide and donkey hide for drink this whip. And we're telling the sinner, you're not recognizing, you're biting the hand that feeds you. You're not recognizing the one who has compassion upon you. So Rav Hirsch, he's telling us that the most basic contemplation of serving God is to know that He's the hand that feeds us. He gives us everything we have. And the moment we violate the Torah, we're denying that fact on one level or another. And we're saying, what God does for me is not all that significant. I have my own interests in mind. So animals get this, but we don't. That's the purpose. That's the verse in Yeshaya. Animals understand this. The shore knows its owner, and the donkey knows its trough and where the food's coming from, but we don't get it. So one of the most basic flaws in a person who's violating the Torah is this flaw, that he doesn't understand the hand that cares for him, and that's why he's so disloyal. So that's what one idea Rav Hirsch says, why this becomes the quintessential prohibition of the Torah, because there is a deeper message here of animals seeing their owner's compassion, but humans not recognizing that from Hashem. So it's a very, very deep point from Rav Hirsch. I would add in one more deep point about this. If we were to look at it symbolically, so it says, "Don't muzzle an ox as it works." But the job which is actually indicated by the Torah is disho, is threshing. So if we know a little bit of the farming process, what the threshing does is you have your wheat stalk, and the wheat stalk has in it the kernel with the flour that you want to grind to flour, but also has a lot of other things on it that are not food. So you have to crush that stalk and crush the kernels to separate all the shells and all of the chaff and all the parts that are not good for us, and get to that kernel of flour. So it's the process of separating the good from the bad. It's what's edible, what's food, and then what we call is what's waste, and what we call psolus, what's waste. So essentially, the idea of disha, of threshing, is what we do in life. Life's about, we have in front of us all of this good stuff and bad stuff. There's waste and there's food. Ochel psolus, as we call it. And our job is to be able to look at the good stuff and take it in, and to ignore the bad stuff. That's our job. So if we were to take this sort of symbolically, metaphorically, we're in this world, and we have in front of us all these choices to make, good and bad. The neshama inside a person, our soul drives us to try to take in all the good food. It's sitting there, the soul's inside of us, and the soul knows what's good, and it's tempted, give me all the good food. And the body muzzles the soul, and the body says, you take a back seat, I'm not letting you have any. I'm going to do what I want to do. And it's a struggle in a person's always. The body says, give me X, and the soul says, give me Y, and we always have that fight. So in a sense, the body muzzles the soul. The guf muzzles the neshama. That's what happens to us. So the neshama is out here, and it sees all around it all these mitzvahs to be done. And it says, gimme, gimme, gimme. And the body says, oh, puts the muzzle on. You can't have it right now. So really, it becomes symbolically the quintessential provision of the Torah, because that's what anything that we do, the violence of the Torah, is you're holding the neshama back from doing what's good because the body wants to do something else. That's how we look at it. So the mitzvahs that we have are to fill up on the good and to ignore the waste. That's the mitzvah. Mitzvahs are do the good things, ignore the bad things. The neshama wants to eat the good things, and it sees it and it's tempted, but the body puts a muzzle on it and says, no, you can't have it. So I think there's a symbolism here of just the entire struggle of good and evil, of body versus soul, Yitzhar Tov, Yitzhar Hara. It's that entire picture of what it means to live as a Jew and do the right thing. It's always that give and take, that struggle. So that becomes sort of us the model prohibition, because it's describing for us what our problem is. Our problem is that our body muzzles our soul and doesn't let our soul do what it wants to do. That's our problem. I want to share just maybe two more, we'll call it symbolisms of this mitzvah. Again, the mitzvah practically is very simple. Don't muzzle the ox, let the workers eat. But I saw quoted from the Sfas Emes, the Gera Rebbe. He has two different things I'd call sort of symbolisms, but they're powerful messages which are part of this mitzvah. So he says, in terms of the workers out in the field, he says, workers out in the field, they're allowed to eat what's there, but they can't put it in their pocket to take home. That's what we said before. So he says, symbolically, this means, when you're out there in the field, it means you're doing your work to serve Hashem. You're out there, you're working as a Jew to do the right things. You're doing mitzvos, you're learning Torah, you're struggling with good and evil. So often as you do that, you come to higher understandings of life, of yourself. You have moments of inspiration, you're motivated, you have a new outlook on life, because you're there trying to fight away the bad and do good things. So at that point, we have two options. Either you take the inspiration and grow from it, or you push it aside and leave it as a nice moment in life, but don't change based on the inspiration. So the Sfas Emes says that symbolically, when you're out in the field and you are serving God, so you produce all this produce is there. Eating it means I'm taking it and letting it help me and using it to grow, to change my life, to become a better person. Putting it away in your vessel means I'm storing it up for another time. I'm putting it in the back burner, as it were. So he says, when you have higher understandings of Torah, when you have higher achievements as a Jew, make sure you take those and you eat them to satiate you, to grow from it, and don't store it away. Don't just store it away for another time and not grow based on inspiration. So that's one symbolic look at this mitzvah. And another Sfas Emes, he says this in a different place, the Sfas Emes. He says, when you're serving Hashem, so lo sachsam shemadisho, don't muzzle the ox. So he says, it's kind of different than we said before. He says that the ox is your body, and the body is muzzled. we're saying before the soul gets muzzled. He says the body gets muzzled. And he says, don't do that. Because when you're serving God, now Jews don't believe that we should take the body and just, you know, say, I'm not going to let you have any physical pleasure. I'm not going to involve you in mitzvah. We believe that mitzvah is sort of full body experience, as it were. It's the soul and it's the body. So, for instance, you know, let's say there's a concept amongst, let's say, Catholics, you know, priests are celibate. You know, they remain, monks remain in these, you know, monasteries out in the middle of nowhere, living lives. They're totally divorced from any sort of physical pleasure. And that's not, you know, Jews don't believe in that. The Kohen Gadol had to be married. You know, he couldn't do the service in Yom Kippur if he wasn't married. There's a mitzvah to have onik Shabbos. You should enjoy your food on Shabbos. You have to. We have to enjoy ourselves as Jews. Hashem gave us a body and a soul. So when you're working for Hashem, don't muzzle up your body, as Fasema says. Make sure your body is involved in it as well. Which means that when you're serving Hashem, the body becomes elevated along with the soul. So don't say that, you know, I'm going to cut myself, and I'm going to fast, and I'm never going to have any fun, I'm just going to be totally spiritual, because that's not the point of having a body. The body's supposed to be elevated along with the soul. It's not meant to be ignored. So don't muzzle your body as you are serving God. And I think there's 2 points to this. You want the body to cooperate. We understand that if the body is left out, it's not natural for a human being, and it creates struggles. Unfortunately, you see the problems which have occurred amongst, let's say, the Catholic Church, based on the fact that they are celibate. And there's a lot of controversial stories that come out of that, because people need to live a natural lifestyle. So the body is to cooperate in our service of God, and beyond that, the body should then become elevated in the service of God. Now, we look at eating could be a very elevating experience. Married life can be an elevating experience. It's not that we do it because we have to. We do it because we feel this is part of our service of God, is to incorporate these things into God's service. So don't muzzle the body as you're serving God. Make sure the body is involved as well in that service. So that's the other point that Sfas Emek makes. So these mitzvahs, again, they're very straightforward in terms of what you're supposed to do. Don't muzzle the animal, let your workers eat. But on a deeper level, there's a lot more here which it presents to us. There's symbolism, and there's a model. There's a model of compassion, number one. Model of what it means to be a compassionate person, to feel for others, feel for your workers. There's the idea of not giving others challenges they can't handle. And then symbolically, there's this concept of being sure that, you know, that our souls or our bodies are muzzled, that our entire being is brought into the service of God.